You're listening to the Process Madness Podcast with Michael D. Wilson. Here's the deal. Business operations and processes are straight up anarchy for most companies, creating unhappy teams, customers, and business owners. It's time to get off the merry-go-round. We'll be deep diving into topics that are directly related to business improvement and the quality of life for those who support and run them. If you're with it, like, share, and subscribe. Let's go. Here's your host.
Hey everyone, Mike Wilson here, founder and CEO of Processology. Today in Process Madness, we have John Hill, aka Small Mountain. He's the founder and CEO of Adaptive Growth, and he's going to be talking to us today about Process Madness, how they overcame that, and what they're currently doing to untangle the madness that they have in their business now. So let's go ahead and get John in. John, can you tell us a little bit about your company and what you do and why you started your business?
Yeah. First, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate you inviting me. We had a good chat the other day. So, you know, Adaptive Growth is all about helping people make sales a little bit more repetitive, right? Selling is this one thing that kind of lives in many people's minds as this thing that you have to do. It's treated as a four-letter word and everything else like this. And that makes it really hard to want to go out and do it on a regular basis. But we know that sales is the lifeblood of any business, right? You can have processes front to back on your back end around delivery and everything else like that. And that's all really great. But if you don't have clients coming in that you can apply those processes to, you're dead in the water. So I've been in sales for about 20 years total and have been in B2B since 2011. And when I first moved to B2B was my first time to really struggle as a salesperson. And the way that I got out of that was by building a process, sticking to it, and then using technology to like actually track and measure what was working and what wasn't. And so that way I had a methodology in place that I could start to really try to improve certain things. So that way the time I spent selling was useful and valid, because I love sales, but I get that a lot of other people don't. But the process is a great way to kind of take the pressure off of, you know, go sell better, which is what a lot of like sales managers like tell people to do. That's like saying go run faster, right? Without any like knowledge about how to like actually make that happen. It's this daunting task. So if you have a process that is repeatable, you can try certain things, right? And make small improvements. And then with tracking, actually taking a data-driven approach. So that way your conversations are good and you're not wasting a bunch of time with people who don't deserve your time. Because time is your time is the biggest thing when you're a salesperson, because you're going to be in high demand and people want your time because they want to try to figure out if it's a good fit. And it's so easy to just waste time with people who don't really need it or, you know, slash deserve it, depending upon what lens you're looking for at the time.
Absolutely. So you're helping them plan out what that sales process is, as well as like what systems and things like that they can use to assist within that process. Is that correct?
Exactly, right? If you ever want to get sales off of your plate, you have got to be able to hand it off to someone else. And for some people, that's terrifying, because if you're doing paid search, you know, and paid lead gen, you know, you might be paying upwards of $150 per lead or something, you know, depending upon the vertical and everything else. And you want to give that to a person who's brand new, like there's going to be some anxiety there. But you got to get it off of your plate, because no one gets into business thinking I'm going to be the CEO, but I'm also going to sell and I'm going to generate, you know, major, major revenue, right? No one does it by themselves. So the thing that you and I talked about the other day was that, you know, without a process, you either have to pay a premium to get someone who's done it before and done it a lot, so that way they can come in and figure it out, or you build the processes yourself as you go along, so that way you can pass them off to somebody else. And that keeps you from having to pay the premium. And right now, there are so many high caliber salespeople that already have the sales skill honed. They just don't know how to sell your product. So with COVID-19 going on and everyone getting furloughed and laid off, a lot of my sales friends have been, you know, kind of left, you know, in bad spots. And so what we're really doing now is we're helping businesses get to the place so that way they can easily hand off their sales to a commission only closer, so that way they don't have to deal with it anymore. But that all starts with process and then technology to track and manage.
Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. And you know, so what we do with the process documentation, a big part of that of taking what you have in your head and the way you know to sell and the way that you know to sell your business, or someone on your team, if they're amazing at selling your product, being able to document how they do, how, what their process is and what they're saying and how, what they're doing, is a great way to try to train some of your maybe least performing sales teams, people on your sales team, in order to show them, hey, try it this way and let's see if that works. And also having that process removes that variation. So now you can start to predict what happens, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, because if you don't have that, then, I mean, you're just sending, you know, good or bad leads in and praying they actually close, right? So,
yeah. And
yes.
Well, I, you know, to that point, there is something so comforting as a salesperson when you can look at your pipeline with and be honest with yourself and know, you know, let's say that you got 500K in deals in your pipeline and you know that some of those are going to fall out. Actually, probably a good number of those are going to fall out. But you know, because you've done the data and you've done the work, that of that 500K, you're probably going to close, you know, 350 of it or 250, whatever your number is, because we have the data. And there's something nice about being a salesperson and being able to like see your future, right? Mm-hmm. It allows you to stand your ground a little bit more. You can go for the no, which usually kind of moves the conversation forward. Being able to stand your ground and not have to discount to close business and do these things that are very easy traps for salespeople, right?
For sure. I mean, if you know, if you have that process and it becomes predictable, you know, okay, we're only going to close, you know, 350 out of 500. You know, most people, when they're, when that 150 is not going through, they're going to start panicking and making, you know, discounts and offers. And, but if you know that, hey, this is normal, then that's just a huge weight off of you, right? So, because you know what to expect. So yeah, I like the idea of that. So let's jump in a little bit deeper. I mean, obviously this is all about the process madness. So I would love to hear a little bit like about, you know, where your company started, where you started, and maybe not having processes, and this can be outside of sales or it could be anywhere in the business, right? Because we have processes in everything, even our personal lives, right? So, so where maybe there was some process madness and where you saw value in actually overcoming that, solving that challenge, and how did that look when you did that? Like, what was that feeling of like being frustrated because, you know, something's not working and then being able to kind of overcome that?
You know, I'm a process guy anyway. It kind of comes naturally to me. I've been in martial arts for, you know, about 16 years now, right? And martial arts is just a process for fighting, right? And every process is a little bit different, but the processes are labeled under these names like jiu-jitsu and kung fu and karate and all these things. But I kind of view everything through that lens. So let's figure out how to make this thing work as best as we possibly can. And then let's figure out what parts are the weakest and then let's shore those parts up. And that's my approach to everything. But if you don't take the time to figure out what those steps are, you can't improve on any of them, right? Because it becomes this lump of a thing that you can't improve on because you don't know the individual components or the parts necessary. So I think a lot of what the process creation side of this is breaking it down into manageable parts, right? And that's kind of what I do for a lot of people. It's let's take this out of how you do it and let's figure out where this breaks. And then let's try to front load as much of that as possible. You know, there was a study done a couple of years ago and it came down with the idea that there's only seven main reasons why business doesn't actually close. Right. And I kind of add one more to that, but that's kind of the basis for like how I build all of these frameworks for and processes for the salespeople to get them using the same things, because most salespeople want to present and then try to overcome objections. Well, that's really hard to practice because not everybody's objections are going to be the same. So you're not going to get maybe as many reps as you should, but what if you proactively had a conversation about those things, right? Let's say that you know that you're on the expensive side and you know that most of your competition is cheaper than you are. So if you know that that is to be true, then you know that there's going to be some sticker shock whenever they see your pricing. So maybe talk about money and the investment necessary to get started earlier, right? So that way you can know, does this person deserve a pitch, or are we going to be so offline and off balance about the value of this and the investment that it doesn't make sense to do so? Because let's say that it takes me 30 minutes to build the proposal and an hour to present the offer to somebody. It's an hour and a half that I'm spending with someone who might not even qualify to get it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So for most of what I'm doing is I'm trying to front load conversationally and into a checklist. Those kinds of the main reasons why people don't buy and the reasons why deals don't close. And so that way we can talk about those things proactively like a checklist, right? Did they meet all the checkpoints? If so, it's okay to present. And if not, let's figure out where the concerns are. Maybe they meet us halfway. Maybe we have to move towards them. But if we can't get on the same page, then let's call this thing over and move on to the next one, right? Mm. The cool thing about having a process is that it makes it very cut and dry. Whereas a lot of salespeople get caught in these ambiguous limbos of, do I close this guy or not? Do I push for this? Do I try to go? And then what happens is that a lot of salespeople just don't have the clarity that the founder has or that the back office does. And then salespeople start to get a bad rap about they're just trying to sell so that way they get paid. Mm. Most of the salespeople I know are not that malicious. They're just trying to like make it happen and drive revenue and hit their goals and everything else. And as owners and founders and leaders, we got to take ownership, right? Mm-hmm. If one of our guys doesn't do the right thing, that's on us, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a training issue there. There's some coaching issues there. Or maybe you need to buckle down on your process and your documentation to really kind of make it so easy that you could put anybody in that role. And as long as they have the table stakes, they should be able to do well. Nobody's a mind reader, and salespeople are arguably some of the worst mind readers on the planet because we love to make all these assumptions with our prospects. But when you can take it out of the mental thing and put it into a checklist that anybody can handle, then you can really easily find someone who's got that gift of gab and the ability to ask hard questions and ability to move people forward or out of the pipeline. And so that way you don't have to do it anymore. And that way you can focus on the other parts of your business that, you know, you do enjoy doing.
Absolutely. I agree with that. And one of the things I will say is like the whole mind reader thing is that, you know, I personally, and I know this because with some of our clients, like their process may be great. It's just the communication of it is what's lacking. So whereas they have a great process, but the actual, the CEO or the management team that put this process together, they know what it is. But they have successfully communicated it to their, let's say in this case, their sales team or their HR team or whatever the team is. Therefore, the team is operating blindly, right? Yep. They don't really know what the expectation is, what the desired outcome is, and why. So a lot of it is just, you know, solving that communication problem. And that could be through training or whatever else that they put in place to do so. But I think that's a good point. Like, teams are not mind readers. They're not going to be able to. If you don't communicate what you want or what you're trying to get or what the desired goal is, you know, how do they do that, right? And it's funny, I've been thinking of some content to put out on social media, and I've been trying to think, okay, how do I break down this process thing very simply? And you know, one of the ideas that I was throwing around was like coffee, right? Like if you like your coffee a certain way and you know your assistant leaves and you hire a new assistant, if you don't tell them how you want your coffee, they're just going to come back with some black coffee that you might not like, right?
Exactly.
So you have to communicate. I want, you know, 2 scoops of sugar. I want creamer, whatever that is, so that they know what you want. And over time, they can learn it and improve it and get better at it. But that's important. And then you go one step further is that the person that was there before them can document the way you like your coffee so that that's something to go to and know exactly how you like your coffee, right? And so it was just, you know, trying to figure out how do you break that down into simple terms. So, okay, so that I like all that, and I think all that makes 100% sense, everything that you said. I'm curious, though, like with your own process, like going through with your clients and things like that, has that changed since the start of your business? You know, like with us, for example, as we go through our business, every time we work with a client, we learn something new. We learn how we can improve things, right? So you get that feedback. So since you started your business, how has your process changed and why? Like, did you find that it's a better customer experience by improving a certain thing? Do you see better results by improving certain things? What does that look like?
You know, what's really interesting is I kind of got here, I mean, kind of by accident. You know, I ran a website design agency with a friend of mine for about 3 years and then started to see the writing on the wall that I didn't really want to be in websites for forever. And so I took a job at a startup and then, that didn't really work out. The burn rate was a little high, and some layoffs happened, and I was newer, so I got laid off, and I decided that I was never going to be in a spot like that ever again. And when I launched Adaptive Growth, there were kind of three main offerings, right? It was the CRM consulting and CRM builds. I was going to do kind of like biz dev, kind of like a hired gun, right? Because I do a lot of networking, a lot of coffees and things like this. And so I'm known for making a lot of introductions. So what I was going to do was, you put me on retainer, I'm asking very specifically about your business needs and things like this. And then I send you, you know, targeted introductions and referrals. I was doing about 40 coffees a month, right? Mm-hmm. And I love that. And then the other thing I was going to do was kind of like fractional sales management, right? If you didn't have a sales manager and you weren't really good at it, you could hire me. I would come in and do it. And then I read the E-Myth. It broke my head, right? As it tends to do. And I realized that two of those things, the networking for hire and the fractional sales manager, were things that were going to be really hard for me to let anybody else do. And none of my clients were going to be okay with me letting someone else do those things on their behalf. So the big thing in that book is, don't build a job around yourself, build an actual company, or be really clear about the fact that you're building a job for yourself and be okay with that. Yeah. I want to be able to take shots on people and hire people and grow. And because I've been very fortunate that a couple of people have taken some pretty large shots on me, and I want to be able to pay that forward. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, my business has got to be scalable, right? It's got to be things that I can give to other people. So when we're talking about the biggest changes, I mean, I had probably four or five clients that were paying me, you know, over $1,000 a month to go network for them because they knew me and trusted me. And I read that book and was, you know, I remember very clearly having like a come to Jesus conversation with myself about, okay, John, like, this isn't sustainable, right? Like, you know, if you want other people, if you want an actual company, then maybe this has to go. And I had to go let those clients go, which was really uncomfortable, right? Because it was good revenue and they were happy with the results. And so I had to go back and say, hey, look, you know, I don't think I can keep doing this for you. I can show you exactly what I'm doing, like how to network the way that I do it. That is the reason why you're getting these leads. But, you know, I need to focus on like growing the company and not, you know, paying for my own time. And that doubling down, as it always does, right? You know, there are so many tales of people like niching and focusing, and that really increases the results. And the same thing has been true for me. When I stopped trying to chase every shiny thing and really kind of double down on, this is what I'm really good at, and the people that I work with see really good results from this, so let's just double down on this. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the biggest shift, you know. But I'm always looking for ways to improve my process, whether it's, you know, the interview that we start with to figure out their sales process, whether it's, you know, our follow-up. Because the thing is, and we talked about this when we had our chat the other day, the process refinement shouldn't ever stop.
Never stop. Absolutely.
And never stop, right? So I'm a big fan of having my partner called them systems review system. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's where you go through. Is this way of doing things still serving us? Right.
Absolutely.
Is there a better way? Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying it's an improvement cycle. You go through it and then you go through it again. Right. It's mm-hmm. like, yeah.
And coming from that martial arts background, like that's where I live. Right. I'm always looking for that last 20% that's going to make this move that works the majority of the time, work all the time, right? And it's not strength, you know, it's always technique, at least in the circles that I run in. And there's huge overlap to business and selling, right? Like the more you practice, the better you're going to get. But most people don't want to practice, well, because it's uncomfortable. I get that. But, you know, if sales is how you make your money, then you've got to put in the time, right? And that means role playing. That means practice. That means, you know, doing these things, because no one becomes a high performer in any area without tons of practice, right? But salespeople, because we're told from very early ages, oh, you like to talk, you should be in sales. Like I remember very clearly an uncle telling me that, even though growing up, I had a terrible stutter, right?
Yeah.
And so then it's just like this thing that you're born with. And that's not true, right? You can teach anybody how to sell if you want to invest the time and, you know, understanding your personality and your quirks and your limitations and fighting to get past all that. But for some people, it's just not worth that time, right? It's easier to go find a commission-only salesperson, put all this in their hands with the right tools and the right knowledge, and let them go get it, because they've already developed that the soft skills that are part of selling.
And that was going to be my next question to you, actually, was, so, you know, you have owners out here, and to hit on what you brought up about the whole EMIF thing, is, you know, they don't want to be in sales. That's not their passion, right? Like, you know, I think I used this example in our conversation the other day. They like baking cakes. They don't want to necessarily sell cakes, right? So is it, would you recommend, I mean, from your experience and what you do, that they go and invest in all the sales training and spend all this time trying to become a great salesperson? Or do they focus on what they're great at, which is in this case, baking cakes, and they hire, like you said, a commission only or someone that takes over sales that's already great and passionate about that part of the business?
So I think it depends upon the person and your goals. Budget obviously has an important part to this. You know, the thing to remember is that, and it talks about this in the E-Myth as well, most people hire so that way they can outsource the things that they hate, right? And then because they hate it, they don't really have a process. And so then you bring someone in, they don't deliver on your expectations, and then you fire them because you're unhappy with the work, and then you got to take that thing back over again. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not on the person you hired. Like, let's be real honest and like real talk. Yeah. That was your failure, right? You didn't set them up for success from the get-go. So in the biggest area where I see this happening outside of sales is in the VA industry, right? VAs can do so much for your business as far as prospecting and automating and servicing your clients and doing these things. But what happens is people just expect these VAs to walk in the door knowing how you want it done.
Right.
What a terrible expectation. Yeah. Like, it's the worst idea ever, right? To just expect this VA, who you're probably paying less than a full-time employee because that was attractive on some level. Yeah. So you just expect this person to know exactly how you want it without communicating that to them. Like, man, like,
but that's, I feel like that also goes into systems as well. Like, people, we talked about this before, people, they get a new CRM system or a new ERP system, and they think that that system is going to solve the problems. But whether it's people, whether it's systems, whatever it is, you need to have processes those things are meant to support your processes.
Absolutely. So
if you just throw them in place and like, okay, now do your job, it's like they're going to fail every time. Yep. But when you create a strategic process that is meant to support, now you have a real chance of success.
You know, what's funny is, someone messaged me the other day and they said, hey, I really don't like this one CRM. I said, okay, why? And they said, well, because there's too many duplicates in there, right? I go in there, I type someone's name, it doesn't pull it up automatically. And so then I go and I create a new one, and then I go back and look, and now I have two of that same person. It's like, okay, you know, did you search for the person first? Or did you just start keying in a name? You know, because some of these CRMs are going to auto-populate based upon field entry, and then some of them aren't going to auto-populate until you've got 8 characters versus 4 or something along those lines. So, excuse me, a lot of what I do once we get a CRM and sales process built is I kind of become an accountability coach, right? At least for the first 4 weeks. If you're trying to do this in-house yourself because you see the value of, you know, having a repeatable process for yourself, even if you're not going to bring on a closer or a salesperson yet, this is still helpful for you because you have clarity around what you need to be doing. But the data-driven approach doesn't work if you don't input the data.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the thing. And I know for salespeople, this is really uncomfortable because so many salespeople want to just live on a results-only basis. But when you live by results, you have to die by those same results as well. Whereas if you have got a process and KPIs and you have some understanding and you can trust that process, then it shifts everything. Management is so much easier. Your life is so much easier. And it, for me as a salesperson, like when I started learning these ideas about process and making it repeatable, and it allowed me to detach from the outcome, which is super important, because when you need a yes in a sales conversation, they know it. Right? They don't know how they know it, and you don't know how they know it, but they know it, and they're going to run you over the coals on your pricing and your delivery and all these terms and everything else like this. Right. The person who's less attached to the outcome wins always, right? Mm-hmm. When the guy who needs to sell the car is more invested than the guy who's going to buy the car, the guy who's going to buy the car is getting the better end of the deal.
Yeah.
When you show up and you're like, okay, cool, I'm only going to buy something if they have the black Maserati, and they happen to have that black Maserati and you fall in love with it and that car owns you, so does that salesperson, right? Because you've gotten emotional, you've gotten attached, and you're going to end up being probably on the lesser end of the negotiation of that deal. Mm-hmm. And that's so important to selling, because the process in the CRM is all a means to an end, so that way you have absolute clarity, because most salespeople operate in this paradigm of more, right? Constant more prospects, more leads, more deals, more this, because they don't really have clarity around what it takes to get to their goal.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and that's a lot of that is the lack of planning, right? It's just like you said, that I think it's important to state what the goal is.
Yeah.
But the journey is more important than the goal, because, you know, if you don't have the right steps, the right tasks, the right things, like a mentor of mine explained to me once, he was like, you know, if you need to make $100,000 a month, don't focus on the $100,000, right? Because that's not going to get you to the $100,000. You need to focus on the small daily tasks you need to be doing that will get you there, right? So that might be, you know, making 20 calls a day. That might be making 200 calls a day. Who knows what that is? But focus on those calls, not the $100,000, right?
Like, exactly.
What you do is you figure out, this is my goal, and then you reverse engineer, what is it going to take to actually get that? And then you focus on those small tasks to get there. So same, you know, with what we're talking about with processes, whether it's the sales, HR, accounting, whatever the process is, you obviously have a goal of what you're trying to accomplish, but it's going to be those every small task that you're doing every day that is going to get you there. So if you don't make sure that those are one, strategic and planned out and communicated, then it's almost impossible to get the overall result. So
A lot of what I do with people is I build out these kind of custom calculators for their use or for their closers use to like help them show like what they're capable of making. Mm. And every time I show someone one of these calculators, which is a spreadsheet, right? But it takes, you know, the sales goal, average deal size, breaking that out, you know, to, okay, I need to talk to this many decision makers.
Yeah.
Total. Right. And that's assuming that no no's come into play. So then we also have to factor in the no's, because no's are important. You're going to be able to weather those no's. So then it's, you know, there's questions around of the people you talk to, how many are actually a good target for you? Right. Because targeting is super important in sales, just like it is in marketing. If you're spending time with the wrong people, you're going to waste a bunch of time.
Absolutely.
And then the last part of that is how many offers do you need to give to that target market to get to one yes, right? And so then from right then, you can see, okay, cool, I might need to talk to 50 decision makers this year, but with the no's, I might need to talk to like 120. And so then you can really see with clarity, maybe I need to like really adjust my targeting, or maybe I really need to adjust my qualification skills, right? Because those are the two biggest metrics, right? Well, that and time, right? How quickly can a deal move through your process? There's a thing called a deal velocity, right? Because if it takes you 6 months to get something, you know, qualified and closed, I mean, that means that all your deals got to be in the pipeline by June.
Yeah.
Right. And that has a huge impact on the number of decision makers and your urgency around your prospecting. Right.
Absolutely.
But once you know the plan and you have this figured out, it becomes very, very easy. Right. It's, you know, most people only need to talk to like four to five decision makers every 2 weeks. Right. So call it 10 decision makers per month. Mm-hmm. And just that becomes more manageable. I just got to talk to 10 decision makers who are in my market and I'm going to be fine. Yeah, probably, you know? Yeah. And so just that level of clarity is comforting, right? Because you can do anything when you know the end point, right? I had a drill sergeant when I was in the Army, and he was like, you know how many you got to do? That makes it easy.
Yeah.
And I used to just laugh because you know, this is the military and I'm going to be doing pushups for forever, right? And so this drill sergeant was like, you've only got to do 150 more throughout the day. So you know how bad it can be. So what are you really worried about? And that just sticks with me all the time. When you know that you only have to do it for a certain amount of time, you can do a lot.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
There's so many little things in the psychology of sales that hold us back. And part of it is not having that clarity about where the goal line is.
Yeah.
You know, working in the website design company with my friend who'd been on this path a lot longer than me. I remember I had no idea what KPIs were. I had no idea like where the goal was or how to get there or anything else, you know? And, we went through this process and I just felt just calm. And I can remember very clearly it was like Thursday and I'd done all my KPIs, all my cold calls, all my ask for referrals, all my LinkedIn reach outs. And, I turned to my business partner and I said, hey, look, I'm done And he's like, for the day? And I was like, no, I've done all my KPIs for the week. And he was like, you feel good about it? And I said, yeah. And he goes, okay, cool. Let's go get a beer. And that was the first time ever in a sales role that was dealt with that way, right? You do these behaviors, you do these activities, and then go enjoy the rest of your time.
Yeah.
Right. Cause like as salespeople, you're taking on more risk than arguably anybody else in the company.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Because so much of your comp is tied to your results.
Absolutely.
And when you don't have that clarity, it's I need more, anymore, 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 anymore. Yeah. And I was that guy. Like I sold financial investments as kind of my last thing before moving into B2B. And I was that guy that was selling all my friends and all my friend circles. And I was that guy just because like I felt like I needed more. I didn't have clarity about, okay, cool. I need to talk to 10 people to get to 2 deals. And so that just means that I need to talk to, you know, 40 people to get to 8 deals and then I'm good for the month.
Yeah.
Like when you can look at it like that and it becomes almost this transactional thing and the weight of it just falls off of you because you've got clarity about where the goal is. And I think if every salesperson had that, if every founder had that, if every coach and consultant had that in their lives, it wouldn't be this thing that you run from and willingly stick your head in the ground around. But I could be wrong.
No, I mean, even for me, like when I'm doing certain things, I mean, when I, cause I think we think very much alike and I think that's what attracted us to each other. That's why we made it where we're at right now. And so, you know, I'm very much about numbers. I'm very much about figuring out, you know, what's that journey look like to get from here to where I want to go.
Yeah.
And so which is why I'm in the business that I'm in, right? It's like, that just comes naturally to me to think that way. But I realize for some people that doesn't, but I think that, you know, like what you're talking about sales, like instead of just calling blindly, to have a couple of milestones to shoot for makes that much easier to say, okay, I just have to call 10 people today versus dreading it. It's like, you know what, let me just get these 10 calls down, you know?
Yeah.
It makes it much easier to process that, I believe. I think that that's a great point for sure. So do you have any processes that you are currently working on improving your business, like in any area, maybe you're looking to scale. So you're documenting some things or what does that look like for you right now?
So with the coronavirus and everybody being at home and so in social distancing and everything else, you know, prospecting is a little bit harder than it once was, right? Cause people aren't at their desks, you know, and things like this. And so, some people that I've been talking to are using some video in their email prospecting, right? Because like emails are still getting to devices, even if they're not sitting at the desk. And so there's a cool tool that I've been kind of experimenting with. It's called Vidyard. And what it does is it allows you to kind of record a quick little video message that you can then email to people. And I know people who go individual on each individual video. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. But I think there's a way to improve that a little bit, right? Because that's kind of just how I approach everything. And so then I'm working with a couple of people of like, okay, let's really boil down who you talk to into 3 groups. And then let's record 3 videos around that speak very specifically to those groups. And let's put some scale behind this thing. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I've been working with some of my clients around that stuff about getting those videos built and how do we target those things? And what do those kind of groups look like? The thing that I've been doing very, very specifically is upping my LinkedIn outreach. Mm-hmm. Right. So, I like referrals as much as any other salesperson does. And, I really like to be walking in the door with a little bit of authority, a little bit of like, hey, you should talk to John because he knows his stuff.
Yeah.
So most of my leads come from kind of how we got connected. Right. I mean, Jake introduced us, big up to Jake. Cause he's, you know, awesome, awesome people. And now we're here and we're chatting. Right. Yeah. And there's a lot of overlap between what I do and what you do, but we don't exactly do the same things. So I make 10 of these asks a day on LinkedIn of like, hey, especially now with Corona going on and everybody working from home, it makes it really easy to be like, hey, you know, with everybody being at home and people having more time, I'm taking this time to try to deepen my connections with everybody that I know. Would it make sense to hop on Zoom and look for some very targeted introductions and potential referrals inside of our network? And then the thing that I'm doing to really get people excited about it is like, look, I have 12 pages of exactly how I do this to keep my pipeline full. And I'll give it to you whenever we're done. So that way you can blatantly copy as much of it as makes sense for you. And that way you can use these same techniques, not charging anything for it. It's just, prospecting is already every salesperson's least favorite part of being a salesperson. So with this, right, I do 10 reach outs a day, right? On average, at least 4 or 5 of those are booking, right? Mm-hmm. And every one of those meetings, I get on average 2 to 3 new decision makers who could be a good target for me.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm doing 4 of those a week. I'm getting 2 on the low end, right? So I'm getting eight new decision makers to reach out to from a referral just by following this process.
Nice.
And it's not hard, but it can be tedious, right? Because there are days where I don't want to do my 10 reach outs. And I had a sales coach and he said this to me once, and I love this line. Once you find success, mm-hmm. once you find the methods that are necessary to get to success, they don't stop working. But what happens is we start to try to outsmart it. Well, I don't have to do that this week. Or how about if I try this instead? And we willingly shove ourselves off the course.
Yeah.
Because we're bored or we want to improve. And for me and probably for you, like I live in that refinement loop. I want to make everything as tight as possible. Absolutely. But sometimes you just can't. Sometimes that idea of I can make this tighter, I can make this a little bit better, doesn't mm-hmm. really serve us. Sometimes you just have to do the hard work and understand that there's a payoff at the end of it. Because the thing about sales is the reach outs that I'm going to do today, some mm-hmm. of those people aren't going to check LinkedIn for a week and then they'll see my message and then they're going to book. And then we'll have our conversation. I will get my introductions and then I follow up with those people. So it might be 2 weeks before I have my discovery conversation with these new decision makers.
Absolutely.
That's only a bad thing if I haven't been prospecting with regularity and my pipeline is shallow right now. Right. Because when you've got a full pipeline, everything is easier. Right. I talk about this all the time, but the way that you keep your pipeline full is by taking consistent action and following a consistent process and it's not necessarily an ATM that you just show up and you pull money out of whenever you need it. Right. You go to the ATM every day is the way that I think about it. Right. You go in there, you put the card in, you punch in your numbers and you pull out your cash and you do it every day. And like, that's how I think about it. When I worked in banking, there was this generational line of people who would come in to get cash because they just didn't use cards very much and they liked having cash on them and stuff. So they would come in every week and they'd do their withdrawal. They didn't even like the ATM, you know, things like this.
I experienced that one at the bank.
Yeah. Be like that person, right? Yeah. Don't be the guy who just shows up because like you might need some cash occasionally. No, that's not how this works. You gotta be consistent. Right.
Yeah, I think everything is really about consistency. I mean, at the end of the day, like we talked about, you know, before, like if you work out every now and then, you're not going to really see any results. But if you work out every day, you will start to see results. Right. Mm-hmm. I definitely think that's true. And I think one of the things I think for once we get comfortable with our process and we feel like we know our process, then we start to fall off because we're like, I don't have to follow that. I got
exactly.
You know, or, you know, it's like, cause like me and I have this bad where, I'll do a sales call. And like, if I'm on my Bluetooth, I actually don't wear cordless Bluetooth really is anymore that much, because what I'll do is naturally start wandering while I'm on the phone talking to the client. And what happens is we go through this call and I'm not even on my talking points. It's on my screen anymore because I walked away from it. Right. And the way those talking points are laid out is to guide the conversation down a process that we've laid out, right? Because there's certain things we want to talk about within this call. So what I've learned is that don't get overly confident, stay at your desk and do that call. That way you can.
and here's the deal. There are some people that I know and that I've worked with who, if you put them in that same boat of like, look, you got to be at your desk and you got to be looking at the screen, you got to follow the checkpoints, that doesn't work for them because they've got this kind of nervous energy, right? So for those people, it shifts to more of like a checklist approach than the script, right? Because I'm of the firm opinion that scripts don't really serve us all that well, right? We need to have enough mastery that we can follow the checklist. But the thing about a script is that it's really hard to sound natural when you're reading a script. And you're also going to miss very subtle little things when you're reading from a script and focusing on the next thing, as opposed to being entirely present in the conversation you're trying to have right now.
Absolutely. And for me, like mine is, that's what it is. Bullet points, talking points, right. To pull the conversation down the path. But yeah, I agree. If I have to read off a script, I'm going to come off so robotic that nothing I'm trying to do is going to actually work.
Exactly.
And like you said, you're not able to, I think conversations are important and powerful, because you're going to get information you probably wouldn't have got otherwise. If you just go down the script, you're going to, you know, miss things. So absolutely. So tell me this. So what is the number one pain point for your clients? How do you help them overcome that? Would that be through the CRM side? Would that be through the strategy side? What does that look like?
You know, everybody who I know in sales is a little bit off as far as what they think they're capable of doing, right? Okay. And I played poker professionally back in 2006, and there was always this joke around the recreational players, right? That if they said that they lost a little bit, it means they lost a ton. Mm-hmm. If they won a little bit, they broke even. And if they won a lot, then they won a little bit, right? Because their perception of it was just off a little bit, right? And then when we combine that with ego, and it's really hard to go tell people, man, I lost a lot of money at the poker table today, right? So it's just easier to be like, I broke even, you know? And the same thing happens here, right?
Yes, you're saying.
What's that?
You got to be honest with yourself.
Yeah, right. You have to. And as salespeople, you know, they've been allowed to kind of live in these results only things. And hey, let that guy run because he's the lone wolf salesperson, and he always makes his quota. And people, I mean, right and left are moving away from that. They don't want those kinds of people on their team anymore because you can't count on them. You can't forecast their results. You can't really tell what they're going to be capable of doing. And it makes it impossible to manage and coach that person, right? So the biggest pain points that I see is people don't really understand what it takes to get to their goals from a sales perspective. So that's a huge one. Secondly, they know desperately that they don't want to be handling sales for forever, but they're near that level of unconscious competency, right? They've had so many conversations, they've done it so many times that they don't break down the whole into the 10 parts. They might know two or three of the parts. And because of that, it makes it really hard to give it to someone else, right? A coach I was working with once told me this line that if you are not replaceable, you're not promotable. Right. And he was talking about it much more from like a corporate ladder approach, and that you should be giving everybody under you as much knowledge as you possibly can. So that way, when it's time to move up, you have someone already ready and groomed. But I think about that for the entrepreneur and the founder, right? You've worn 18 hats at various points, and some of those hats are really easy to delegate and just hand off to people and stuff like that. But the thing about sales is everybody views it differently. Right. And it's supposed to be that way. And that's kind of okay. But when you take two marketers and you put them together, they start talking instantly. And there's some table stakes for that conversation. Right. There's certain acronyms and certain knowledge and stuff like this. And that doesn't always happen with salespeople because, you know, qualified means different things to different people. Different people look at different metrics. Different people look at, you know, at this thing, this conversational weird thing between two humans.
Yeah,
an infinite number of ways, right? And so when you look at a company and the salesperson, or let's say the owner has been the salesperson and they've been successful, because you know you don't get to this point if the owner can't sell,
right?
And they hire their first salesperson, and the salesperson comes in and says, "I got one, boss."
Yeah.
Well, that could mean 7,000 different things. Like, what does that mean? You know, does that mean like you got one closed, you have a prospect who's ready to meet, they're qualified, so they make, I mean, there's like, what has got one? And salespeople love to live in this like ambiguity limbo, right? And a lot of business owners enable that because they're like, I'm just going to look at the results. And they're doing okay, you know, but when it comes to hiring, which is a nightmare anyway in small business, because you know, you're not sure how to do it. You're not sure if you can trust this person. It's going to take a lot of time to train this person. So you want to hire the right person, because if they leave and you got to do it all again, it's going to be worse. And it's hard, right? Because if you don't know what you're doing, you can't tell it to somebody else. Like, go try to teach a kid how to tie shoes for the first time. It's a nightmare. Like, I have an 8-year-old, and at 3 years old, we were trying to like show her how to tie shoes and everything. And it was the roughest thing ever. So eventually I just got a piece of board, cut some holes in it. I ran a shoestring through it. And then we would literally just practice the first knot over and over and over. And then we do the first knot in the first loop. And then we do that for a little bit. And then finally the loop and the run around the tree with the nursery rhyme and all these things. And then finally she gets it. And then we practice a little bit more. And now she's got unconscious competence, right? She can do it without having to think about it. The bad thing about that is that she couldn't teach it to somebody else right now because she does it mindlessly.
Right.
And
right.
The cool, in my opinion, and I'm curious about your opinion on this, is you, to do process documentation correctly, you got to be doing it as you are documenting it, right? If you just try to pull it all from your head, you're going to miss so many things. So
it depends on who's doing it, right? So like, so typically like, so when I work with clients, it's departments that we're working with, right? To, to do the process. So there's 6, 7, 8 people and we're trying to document the entire process.
Sure.
And yeah. So it is definitely, I think it's easier if you were to sit next to each person and say, okay, walk me through what you do. And they are actually able to do it and you document it. Yes, but that's not always realistic. So a lot of times we're, you know, in a conference room or even, you know, right now with the whole COVID-19 thing going, we're using remote whiteboards. Digital whiteboards. And so a lot of it is me pulling teeth, trying to get out, you know, walk me through what you did, right? Walk me through this, walk me through that. And so I, in our case, not necessarily. It's just about us, like, we know the right questions to ask. We know the things to look for. And it's a lot of us doing research prior to even doing that call and having some understanding. But I will say that it is harder because for the person giving you the information for their job, them trying to think about with it, that they don't, they just, like you said, doing it mindlessly. They're not really thinking about the process. They're just like, this is what I do.
Yeah.
So when you say, oh, explain it to me, they do have a hard time explaining it. You say, show it to me, that's a lot easier for them to do. Right.
Oh, okay.
So for me, I would say it's a yes and a no. Like I have situations where the person just can't explain it to me. So then I'll say, okay, well, show me what you do. Like go to your desk. If you were onboarding a new employee today, and they can do it, and I would record that. But most of the time we don't do it that way. Most of the time we're like in a room and it's like, okay, explain your part. And we put it on the board and try to get the overall map and picture. I just had a client the other day. We did some mapping and going through that process, like almost instantly, we found things that are just going to cut the time to take a client through the onboarding process almost in half, just because we were able to cut out entire meetings. Because it's like, well, why is this meeting happening? This meeting's redundant. And, and one of the big things in processes is handoffs. Is handing off like that. If you don't have that handoff agreement or arrangement that is in place, I don't care how good a lead is. I don't care how good, you know, marketing sending a lead to sales or whatever that looks like. If that handoff is not there, it can just kill everything.
For sure. Right. In my, when we had our website design agency, in the beginning, I was the salesperson, the BD person, but I was also the project manager. I manage all the prospect or all the deals that my partner and I closed. And eventually it got too much. So we brought on a project manager and we fell into the same traps that everybody else falls into, right? Of just like being like, okay, cool. Now this person is in charge of this, so I don't have to be anymore. And we didn't really do, you know, we worked based upon projects and we would have defined scopes of work and stuff like this. But one of the things that we didn't do is we didn't add time for changes. Right. So this was the exact scope. And if you wanted anything outside of this, it's going to be extra. But the goal here is to get you launched with something that you're going to be happy with. And the thing was, is that everybody would be like, oh, John, I'm not going to want any changes. And it's like, okay, I know you're lying because I've done this, you know, 150 times, but I get that you think that there's not going to be changes necessary. And so what would happen is they would then talk to the project manager and say, oh, well, John said that there was changes. Because everybody forgets everything, right? With enough time, everybody forgets everything. And so we started to have to do these kind of handoff calls, right? So I would close the deal, we would get paid, we would hop on a call, me, the project manager, and the client to go over that scope, reaffirm all the kind of verbal agreements and agreements that maybe we had talked about that maybe weren't part of the scope, you know? Just that way she could be set up for as much success as possible, right?
Yeah.
And then eventually we define that as a process, right? What do we need to cover on these calls? Like, here are the bullet points and here are these things that, you know, because I don't want to, I don't want to complicate a process just to make it complicated. It needs to show some benefit to saving time or really? You know, improvement. And I think about that a lot, right? Because there were so many deals that could have gone smoother had we implemented that process sooner.
Yeah.
Just because people forget things or details get cloudy, right? I mean, the game of telephone works in that standard kind of display of like how things get muddled from person to person. Yeah. So it's going to happen in your business as well. So
it's, you know what, it's when it comes to the handoff parts, I mean, like you could just be having a casual conversation with a potential client and say, oh yeah, we could do that. And for that client that sticks, oh, they said they could do this. Yep. But for you, it's not part of your normal process maybe. So you forget you even said that when you're mm-hmm. on the call. And now when your team gets onboarded, and when that client gets onboarded, they're asking your, you know, dev team or whoever is like, well, you know, you guys said you could do this.
Yeah.
And the dev team's like, to me, right? So it's like now you have to pick that up and try to figure it out. So
the other interesting thing is that there's a personality component to this that we haven't even talked about, right? Because you and I very much live in process, in logic, in all of these things. But me and three other people have a podcast where we talk about personalities in sales, right? It's called Sales mm-hmm. Throwdown. And the thing that is so interesting to me there is that as interesting as how those different personalities using the DISC methodology show up in the differences between me as a C and someone who's a D and someone who's an S, mm-hmm. like that is so much far wider ranging than just sales conversations, right? Because if we take that conversation a moment ago of like, cool, once it gets to here or once I'm done with it, you take it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to push back and you're going to push back and say, okay, let's define that line, right? That way there's clarity around these things. But there's a lot of people who just think that they know, right? Yeah. And it's not even a bad trait, right? They're like there's some goodness behind that trait, but they're so just task driven and gut driven that they just say, you know what? Cool. I got this. Right. Cause mm-hmm. they know they're going to be successful with it and that's okay. But the thing that the problem lies in when you are not super clear about your expectation about how you want that handled or where that transition takes place, because then you got too many chiefs and not enough, that's a terrible metaphor. Too many cooks in the kitchen kind of thing. So.
No, I mean, you know, the funny thing is, so like the way I look at processes period, like in a company and, it's an assembly line. Like it's a factory. And I love, you know, cars. I love Tesla and like the whole like thing they're doing with the electric cars thing. So I'll use that as an example. If they want to guarantee they get the same car result at the end of that, you know, factory, at the end of that assembly line, mm-hmm. then everything needs to be strategically laid out, right? You can't just have equipment all over the place. It needs to be, you strategically lay it out to say, okay, it makes more sense to put the hood on first. Yeah. Or it makes more sense to put the steering wheel on last. Whatever that is, you have to think about what is that process and what makes more sense for us to operate efficiently and effectively, right? Mm-hmm. And then when you think about the equipment that's in that factory, everything is sharpened and you know, tightened and like it's to where it just works. It does what its job is. Yeah. And so the business is the same way. Is you have your systems, you have your people, you have all these are all pieces of your factory that are meant to take a client from wherever they are. Like in your case, it may be a client that is frustrated with sales. And they're like, you know, we have no clue what we're doing in sales and we're not getting the results we want, to delivering a client that you've sharpened to a point to where they know exactly what they're doing, know exactly what they're saying, and they know exactly what their sales process is. So now they have a greater chance of getting, you know, their conversion rates go up or whatever it is they're looking for. So in your business, taking your clients to that process, the best thing that you can do is strategically lay out your customer journey and sharpen each one of those areas, your sales team, your production team, your like, make sure every one of those pieces in your business know exactly what they're doing and why, and mm-hmm. what their expectation is when the client comes out of that part of the journey. And all of this works together, right? Because one piece is working great, but the next piece is broken. Then now everything after that is not going to get the desired result, right? It's going to, because at some point they're not getting I hate to use the technical terms, but it's like input and output, right? Like if you're given a bad output, there's no way for you to turn that into a good input. And I was talking with someone the other day and I was like, you can get, and I think it may have been a call that we were on with Jake, where I was saying, you know, you can have if you buy bad produce, you're going to get a bad meal, right? But you can buy great produce and still have a bad meal if the cooking process is terrible.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's important for businesses to realize, like, it all works together to get whatever it is that you're trying to get. And you need to strategically lay it out and plan and put some processes in place for your systems and teams to support, no matter if it's a sales process, accounting process, HR, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I think the nugget in there that I don't think that maybe other people are going to pick up is that processes can break down from just very, very small changes, right? So let's say, for example, that you have two offers, you know, that your salespeople can offer. And one of them is the $5,000 to $8,000 offer. Yeah. And that's the one that you want them to offer. But you got one person on the sales team who really, really likes offering the $2,000 to $5,000 offer. Right. Which should be saved, right, as the downsell, right? Let's offer this first. If they say no to this, then that is the only time that we do this thing. But if you don't make that really clear to that salesperson, then if they have a hard time talking about money, if they have a hard time qualifying, if they don't feel sure of themselves, then they're gonna do what they feel is easiest. And if they've had success selling the lower priced offer, then that's the one that they're gonna default to.
Absolutely. But
when you look at tech companies do the best job of this. You know, we talked a lot about HubSpot, you know, the other day whenever we were talking. And I'll tell you that if you talk to four different salespeople at HubSpot about the same product, you're going to get almost the same conversation, the same demo, and the same process front to back. Yeah. Because that is the only way to ensure the level of quality, right? And if you want to grow your salespeople or your sales team, right? Let's say you want to hire three salespeople, then you need to be able to put them into the same process so that way you can coach around those things. So that way, you know, there's so many ways for it to break down, right? If one person is allowing people to say, well, let me think about it and I'll call you back, they're going to have a longer selling cycle than someone else who pushes back on those kinds of things. So let's make that part of the process. Yeah. Let's build it part of the checklist. Hey, sounds like you're asking what it looks like to work together. We can absolutely talk about that. Once we do that, do you think you could let me know if this is a good fit for you or not?
Absolutely.
You know, once you frame that expectation and doing little bitty changes around stuff like that, you know, setting expectations, getting buy-in, getting permission, so that way you can have the best conversation possible. If you have one person on your team who is not in the right mindset to be able to use framing and to set expectations appropriately and do the permission and buy-in kind of thing, they're not going to achieve at the same level.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you don't have that process in place, you don't know why they're not as successful as the other people on your team are. You just kind of leave it up to this, well, their innate talent isn't at the same level. And that's crazy because no one comes out of the womb saying, hey, Mr. Prospect, does this sound fair, right? Like these are all learned behaviors, right? And if they're learned behaviors, then that means that we can improve them. But until you know the seven parts that make the whole, you can't break down those seven parts and try to improve them, right?
Yeah.
And you know, tech companies do some of the best job of this that I've seen. And those are the people that I look for, you know, how are they doing these kinds of things? You know, I mean, Salesforce, HubSpot, you know, these companies with the SDA account executive kind of framework, it works, right? I don't love it for myself, right? Because I think it's a little bit limiting to just be the cold calling guy who sets appointments and having that as a very different skill set from closers, but they are different skill sets.
Yeah.
So
And I'll throw in there that I think a big part of it is those companies invest heavily in knowing who their clients are.
That is
probably one of their biggest investments, I would assume, is they know exactly who they are, they understand their pain points, and that they're able to tailor their process to their client, right? So like one of the things, like when I work with clients and we're dealing with the sales process type of thing, we do a lot from the automation perspective. But one of the things that I talk to them about is like when you get off that call, if they're not buying, you need to have an idea why. Was it because of the cost? Was it timing? Was it they said you need to talk to a partner? Like what's the reason why? So that when you follow up, rather manually through automation, that you are following up strategically, right? Like you don't want to be talking to them about timing if that's not the problem, right? Maybe they just you can't squeeze, you know, sweat from a rock or water from a rock or something. You know, right? So it's like if it's a financial thing, a lot of times people don't move forward because they don't trust you. And so knowing that is a great way to say, okay, I know that I need to build more trust with this person following up with them. So just knowing what to send them in that messaging and stuff like that. So a lot of the times we tell our clients, like, in your sales conversation, when you get out of that, whether you're asking it or not, and I think it's better to just listen to get that information, because most people are not going to tell you. But if you're listening, you can pretty much get, like, if they were all in until you set the price, then it could be a money thing, right? It could be a trust thing. Yep. You know, what is it? So, so I'll leave it at that. But I think that that's important to really include those things in your process and account for them. So,
exactly. Right. I mean, so I used to have this pickup truck that I drove for a number of years because it was free, or my parents had given it to me. And, it had gotten to the point where, like, I had driven this thing into the dirt, right? And so I live in Texas. It's warm. So in the summers, it would overheat. And I had one tire that would leak air, you know, on a regular basis. And so then all of a sudden, I didn't just go get in my truck and drive away. The process changed, right? I would go out and I'd check that one tire. Cool. Good. I'd crack the hood. I would check, you know, like, how much fluid was in the radiator. Good. Then I would drive off, right? And, like, that was the process, right? I'm just setting myself up for success further down the road. And what happens is salespeople, a lot of this stuff you pick up just by doing it over and over and over again, right? And the hardest thing about working with someone who's somewhat new is they haven't, and this sounds terrible, they haven't been kicked in the teeth enough times from their prospects of, you know, falling into some of these traps. So they don't really understand, like, why it's important to, like, front load their sales process to qualify to figure it out, right? Because one of the biggest things is that you pitch to someone, excuse me, you present to someone and say, this looks great. We'll call you in November. Mm-hmm. Well, why November? Well, because we're not ready to buy now. This is a fourth quarter initiative.
Yeah.
You know, and all you had to do was ask. Like that, that's really all you have to do. So eventually the savvy salesperson starts taking those objections and those hurdles and those big non-starters, and they start asking about them before they pitch. Right. Yeah. So they start to qualify, they start to develop a process. Right. And people who are really conscious about their time go super down that rabbit hole and really kind of build out a process to make sure they're doing these things. But, and, you know, I'm a big believer of, like, if it hasn't failed you yet, you don't really see the value of trying to fix it or improve it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that I've personally, and I'll put this out in my own sales process that I've had to learn, is especially with what I do, because it can get complicated. And if you're familiar with story brand, you don't want people to burn too many calories, right? Sure. Is one, qualifying prior to even having them book a call. And I do that through many different ways, through automation, through seeing what type of pages they're reading on my website and things like that to see what they're interested in. But other things are asking the right questions. And so when someone gets on a call with me, my goal is the customer journey that they've went down, they already know what I do. They already have an idea that I can help them. And so when we get on the call, I don't need to turn this into an education about my services, right? Yeah. It's like because that, for what I, in my experience, at least in my business, that is the quickest way to lose people. So it's more about talking about their problems, their frustrations, and what they're dealing with. And then at the end, if I feel like, okay, yeah, we can totally help with this, then I'll offer my service. But I used to go into this whole, like, I don't even get to the offer part because we're doing the whole call is about explaining what we actually do.
Yeah.
So now we strategically do all that prior to the call, where we break down through educational content that they can view, through opt-ins they can view, and things like that, that already teach them about what we do.
Absolutely.
So I think, at least for myself, I can't say that would apply to everybody, but at least for processology, that has been extremely important to educate people on what documentation, how is it important to their business prior to getting that sales call.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone is in this race to put out, you know, mountains of content, right? Because it, you know, lead magnets and content marketing and FAQs and all of these things, you know, they're super important, right? And these high performing teams, you know, like when you look at HubSpot, they've got so much content and so many lead magnets and everything else like this.
Yeah.
And you have to know that those salespeople are seeing the kind of lead magnets that you're looking at to keep, so that way they can keep the conversation focused.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely.
And, you know, in sales, like, you have to, And I think that people view this wrong all the time, right? Because there's all this talk in the sales world about overcoming objections, right? Mm-hmm. And just even calling it that, in my opinion, is not very healthy, right? Because it makes it seem like you're putting up this wall and then I have to drag you over this wall. And it's like, that's not true, right? They're allowed to have concerns.
Oh, for sure.
And questions and things like this. Now, are you going to like let those questions lie unanswered? Are you going to push to make sure that you understand what they are? Are you going to push to figure out like how they're going to impact, you know, the results of this call? Yeah. You will after a while, but you know, there's a lot of coaching and training to get to that part. Yeah. But the, you know, if they're talking to you about certain things, you know, and their pain points, your presentation needs to be about how you handle those pain points.
Absolutely. Right?
It doesn't mean it's not carte blanche to take 45 minutes to just brag upon yourself around things that might not have any value to them. So the conversation is all about, you know, let's talk about some of the main pain points that I hear from other clients. See if those are relevant to you. If they are, let's have a conversation. And if not, awesome. Like, I'm glad that you're not in the boat to where you need these kinds of things. We can shake hands and part as friends and it's not a big deal.
Yeah, but, absolutely.
You know, I mean, you know, there's a lot going on in that kind of stuff, you know, that's harder to do whenever you need it. You know, it's way harder to do whenever you don't have clarity about what a good fit versus a bad fit is, because when you don't know what you said, what you're supposed to say no to as a salesperson, that means you're trying to get everybody to say yes. And that is a problem, right? Like that's a huge problem.
I agree for sure. And one thing is, before I got two more questions for you really quick, but sure. Before I get into that, I did want to hit on something since you brought up HubSpot. We use HubSpot as well, and we use VideoGuard and all that. I've been, is it VidGuard? Yeah, I can't forget exactly.
Yeah, VidGuard, yeah.
We use them as well. But one of the things I will say that I love is that I think HubSpot does well is like when you get on a call with them, a sales call, what they're trying to figure out is which one of their products they should talk about more. Are your issues and your challenges in marketing, sales, or servicing? And their product is broken up to, okay, this conversation is going to focus more on our marketing piece, or it's going to focus more on our sales piece, or more on our service piece. So them knowing that allows them to direct the call to one of those solutions versus, you know, if your problem's in marketing, it makes no sense for them to be talking about the service piece, right? Because that's not where your pain point is right now. So I think just that is asking the right questions is definitely something that you want to do. But what I want to talk with you about, John, the last question is here is one of the questions we ask everybody is, what was the best investment you've made into your business? And what was the worst investment you've made in your business?
Oh, man. I love this question. God, this is deeply uncomfortable. This is fantastic. let's see. The best investment. God, this might sound a little cliche, but I spent a long time expecting companies to want to spend money to improve me, right? When I worked for some of the bigger companies that I've worked for before moving into small business, I just kind of had this unfair expectation that it was the requirement to like invest in me and stuff. And when I got into the small business realm, I kind of did away with that mindset and really just kind of focused on, okay, I want to get better at this. Let me go find someone who does that and try to learn from them. And what's really crazy is that all comes from a martial arts background, right? When I met my business partner, Jeff, from the website agency in martial arts class, right? I was one of the assistant instructors. We worked together a lot because we're both taller guys. Mm-hmm. And he knew that I was in sales. And at the time I was selling medical devices and struggling for the first time as a salesperson. And he's like, hey, you should come meet my coach. And I said, I don't need a coach, bro. I need more doors. Right.
Yeah.
And I had all that standard sales ego that like I run into all the time now. And finally I was like, man, I spend 16 hours a week in an environment to where I'm learning directly from someone who knows more than I do. So why would I not take that approach with everything that I possibly can to get the best results possible? Like it's so crazy, right? Because these guys will do jujitsu and CrossFit and like all of these things and they love it. But the idea of like hiring someone like myself or a sales coach or someone along these lines to help them better professionally is like unspeakable, right? I don't need any help, right? And so I would say the best thing I started doing was really taking ownership about, you know, how I learn the best and what's going to make me feel good about learning new skills. And it's working with someone who's done it and has got the knowledge and can answer my questions, because, and I'm as sure, I'm sure you're a lot like me in this way. I have lots of questions, right? Like my middle name is John, too many questions, Hill, right? Like it's just well known. And I don't do well in situations where I can't turn to someone and ask those questions, because then what happens is I have to try to figure it out on my own, which is never the best use of my time.
Yeah.
In my opinion. So really doubling down on finding coaches in areas that I want to improve on, you know, going and finding people who are doing it better than I am, and then being like, hey, like, you're killing it. How, what can I learn? Can you help, kind of thing?
For sure.
The worst investment I would say in my business was probably, there's so many options, you know, from like, from tech that I purchased and never used, right? Because one of the guys that I follow in the business and marketing realm is Noah Kagan, right? He runs AppSumo. Mm-hmm. And they've got all these $50 deals on software tools that I might use eventually. Right. So I've probably invested.
Do I just buy it and put it on the shelf until I need it, or
exactly. Right. So like I've bought in course platforms that, you know, I don't have a course, but maybe eventually I kind of take this idea that I do and build it into a course. So I've done some of that. I've done some of the hiring of like one-off people to do very specific things around my marketing. Like, you know, this guy wanted to write a funnel for me and I said, okay, sure. Yeah. And I didn't ask good questions, right? I wasn't like, hey, are you going to build this all the way out, or are you just going to give me the foundational stuff? Right. I didn't know to ask. So I ended up with the foundational stuff, and I'm not an ads guy. So I'm like, great. Now I've got this webinar script, which what the hell do I do with this kind of thing? You know? And so it's those things, right? And now in the future, because my process has changed, hey, do you build the whole thing, or you just give me copy and content?
That is so important to ask. Like I tell, sometimes I'll get people that reach out to me and they're like, all I want is you to build our process out. And I'm like, that's not how we work. Like, because a lot of people, like, they have it in their head and they want to build it. And I can't, the thing is, for my clients, when I work with you, I want to get you great results. And I can't guarantee you great results if you don't plan it out. Right. Yep. Like, so and
I think for you very specifically, there's this idea of like, you know, I can probably figure this out, but you already have a way. So let me just figure out your way of doing it, because that's what's going to make you happy anyway, right? And that goes back to like the hiring of a VA. Let's say you hire a VA and all you want them to do is post on your social media, but you don't tell them what to post.
Right.
Huge gap there, right?
Yeah.
Or let's say that you hire a VA and they're going to build a prospecting list for you, but you don't ask them like, hey, how much time do you need? Or give them a cap on time. And then all of a sudden you get a bill for like 70 hours and you're like, what is going on? That's not on them. That's on us, right? We didn't explain things clear enough the first time. And if you have kids, this happens constantly, right? Yeah. Like my daughter will come in and be like, okay, Dad, I'm done like cleaning up my room. And then I have to stop and turn to her and say, if I go look, am I going to think it's clean? And she says, nope, hold on. Right. And then she'll go clean it again. And then she'll come back in and then we'll go look at it. And then it's good. But her version of clean is different than mine, right? And that's okay. But I can't hold her to an expectation that I haven't communicated.
Yeah, and you have to define what you're looking for, right? Like, one of the things I remember, you know, when we were younger, is that the parents said, clean your room. It's like, okay, so we grab everything and throw it in the closet.
Yeah.
Like, now the closet's down, right? Yep. So it's like, no, hang up.
What does clean actually mean?
Yeah, what does clean mean exactly? So Dad, I think we talked about some great, great things today. Can you tell us what I would love is, where can people find you if they want to consider your services and maybe just learn more from you? And what's the best way to connect? Is that social media? Is that email? Is that?
Man. So all my stuff, you know, the kind of quick rundown is we have a weekly podcast and YouTube show where we talk about personalities. And we focus on the sales end of it because we're all salespeople and we're still like in the trenches selling. But this knowledge around your personality and how you communicate and being able to give other people what they need is important whether you're in sales or not, right? Mm-hmm. As a parent, my life got easier whenever I realized that I do certain things very specifically because of my personality that doesn't always communicate very well to my daughter and my girlfriend, Melissa. And now that I know this stuff, I can communicate much better and my life is easier and things like this. So whether you're in sales or not, knowing your personality and how you communicate and what's important to you will allow you to then look at other people, be like, man, we haven't ever been able to get along and I don't know why. Well, it might be a personality tick, right? Yeah. It could be that you're like me and you need lots of questions to figure out where the lines are. Yeah. And you might be dealing with someone who doesn't really do very good with that detail. And if you don't set an expectation around, hey, can we really dive into this thing so that way I have the clarity that I need to feel comfortable.
Right.
Then you don't, and they feel like you're bothering them and they feel like you're not competent. It's not that you're not competent. It's just, you need different things to feel comfortable.
Yeah. From your perspective, it's different. And a lot of times people don't, they're looking at things from their perspective, not your perspective. Like, you need more information to
exactly.
Well, then maybe the next person. I get that.
Exactly. So
what's the name of that podcast?
It is called Sales Throwdown. It is also on YouTube. So if you like to watch your podcasts, or if you want to watch the four of us drink, then you can. And what's really interesting is we use the DISC model, which has been around for a while. If you've been in sales for any length of time or in business, you probably heard about it. And we have someone who makes up those four quadrants. We have someone who's a C, a D, an I, and an S. And you really hear the differences in how we communicate in pretty much every show. So we've had some people reach out to us and like, hey, look, I'm pretty good at sales. I've been doing this for a while and I've been successful, but just hearing how you guys approach the topics and how you guys actual handle conversations helps me in my role, which is hugely validating and super nice.
Absolutely.
So we're on Spotify. We're on all the major podcast networks. If you like to watch it, it's on YouTube. Just search for Sales Throwdown. We pop right up. Okay. We give out the assessments on a fairly regular basis through giveaways, and we'll actually call you to go over the results with you so that you can take that information and make it actionable in your conversations the next day. Adaptive Growth is my company where we do the sales process and CRM consulting. It is about building the systems and processes so that way you can be completely data-driven in your sales, right? And move to KPIs and process and not results only. Because when it's results only, you're going to deal with longer ramp-up times. It's going to be harder to coach people through to like actually see them get to success. And you're going to deal with a lot of people, you know, bringing in bad deals, discounting, doing these things that salespeople happen. That stuff goes away when there's a process and there's trust around that process.
Nice.
That's at Adapted Growth. And then my personal brand is johnsmallmountain.com, where I talk about the stuff that I've learned as being an entrepreneur and being in business. There's obviously a big sales slant to that, because as an entrepreneur, until you give it to someone else, you are your sales team. Like, right. And a lot of people don't pay enough attention to that, in my opinion. John Small Mountain, is also on Twitter and Instagram. I like to make these funny, I think they're funny anyway, sales memes about, you know, how people mess up sales. So, that's good for a laugh. And, so at John Small Mountain, at Adapted Growth, and at Sales Throwdown, we're pretty popular on all the main channels, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you coming on and talking with us about processes and giving us some of your knowledge on sales processes and all that good stuff. So it was great to have you. And you know, me and you've had a conversation before, and we can geek out on this all day long. So
absolutely.
Thanks for coming on. And hopefully our listeners were able to really listen to some of the things you were saying and can start to apply some of that to their business and at least start to think about their sales process in a more strategic way and not just, you know, going and focusing on the result and not looking at any of the KPIs and things like that. So,
yeah.
All right, buddy. Well,
awesome. Thank you so much.
Do you want to say or anything or?
I'm not sure when this is going to come out, but if this comes out fairly quickly, right, and this is almost cliche at this point, but like, we're in unknown times, right? Anybody who tells you that they know what this looks like and when it's going to end is probably trying to sell you something. So adjust now and be on the front end of that, right? Because there's a lot of people who are still frozen, right? They're waiting to see if this goes away. They're waiting to see how this impacts, and they're not taking any action. When you take action, you are already ahead of the curve. So make your adjustments, right? Be looking at the KPIs, because when you just look at revenue, you can tell yourself any lies you want. Right. So find two points that make sense to you and your business and know them intimately as far as the inputs and the outputs, which is what you said earlier. And then once you know those inputs and outputs, it makes it really easy to coach and manage and make adjustments.
I agree with that 100%. I'll leave it with this, is I don't think that anything is going to be the same after this. And I think it's a couple of reasons. I think a lot of people that are working remotely now, businesses that have been forced to adjust to that, that were afraid of the idea of having a remote process in place, they're going to realize, holy crap, it's not as bad as I thought it would be, right? And it's like, you know, so... Well,
I agree with you, because there's been so many companies that will let other people work remote, but a lot of these same companies force the sales team to still come in, mm-hmm. right? Which is crazy to me, because if you let everybody else work remotely, but the sales team still has to come in to make their calls and do their activities, there's a lack of trust there, right? And with that lack of trust, all sorts of things begin to happen, right? Whereas if you can say, look, here's what you need to do for the week. You need to do X number of cold calls, X number of LinkedIn reach outs, X number of referral asks, X number of cross-sell opportunities, and that should get you to this number of conversations, which should keep us on that path. You can let anybody work from anywhere they want.
Yeah.
Right? And you can have some trust in it, because then you can just say, hey, you didn't do the number of cold calls. Why not? And it makes it really easy to go manage that person, because you have an agreement in place about what it takes to get there. Now, absolutely. I think I'm with you. I think a lot of these companies are going to realize that they have been paying mountains and mountains in rent since they've been forced, since they've been forced to let their salespeople work remotely. They're going to see the benefits of that. Now, the people who will see benefits are people who are following a KPI-driven process and not just a results only, what have you done for me lately process. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my goal is to help as many of those people like right now, so that way they can continue to like allow their people to work from home, as opposed to laying them off and hoping for the best things. And, you know, because there is so much high caliber sales talent, like that is looking for roles and jobs and everything else like this. If you have good lead gen in place, let's just make sure that we can drop that person in and know within five calls if they can follow the process and be coachable and someone who's going to be good to work with, as opposed to giving them 50 opportunities in 7 months, because there's like a longer ramp up time, because you're essentially paying them to go figure it out on their own. Stop that, right? Give them the tools, give them the keys of the castle, and mutually agree upon the behaviors and activity counts that are necessary to get to those goals. And then it's super easy, because then you just have to hold them accountable to their activities. Mm-hmm. That's so much easier than just saying, right, the same thing we talked about in the beginning. Hey, run faster.
Yeah.
Well, how do I do that? I don't know how to do that, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah. I think, you know, pace yourself and run longer is a better approach, you know? Like, you know, it's, you know, you run fast and you burn out. That makes sense. So, but great. Well, John, again, appreciate you being on here, and, you know, we'll get on the next one. So we'll get to the next podcast, and hope you guys love this, and make sure that you subscribe and everything. And go follow John so that you can, I'm actually going to go and follow the podcast, because I'm really interested in, and I love the like psychology and things like that when it comes to sales and stuff.
Awesome.
And just learn about that. So I'm definitely going to go subscribe myself. So you guys go subscribe, and again, John, thanks for being on here, and I'll leave it at that.
Man, thanks so much for having me on. This was awesome.
You just listened to the Process Madness Podcast. If you're with it, like, share, and subscribe. Also, don't forget to visit us at processology.net if you're looking to operate better, live better.